Thank you both. We'll go back to State versus Feely.
My apologies to the court.
It's a long way to come.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the court. Dana Nelson on behalf of Thomas Feely. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes, please. There are three issues in this case: prosecutorial misconduct, ineffective assistance of counsel, and the court's imposition of consecutive sentences. I'd like to rest on the briefing with regard to the consecutive sentences issue and just focus on the misconduct and ineffective assistance. Prosecutorial misconduct, we basically argue that there were three times in closing where the prosecutor committed misconduct which requires reversal. The first instance was when the prosecutor argued that the jury could base the endangerment aggravator on the stop stick officers, the officers who laid down the spike strips to stop the truck. Now, this was misconduct because it was a misstatement of the law. The plain language of the statute 9.94A.834 specifically excludes pursuing police officers.
And what's pursuing, common definition to follow? Does that limit it to inherent in the crime? You have to have a pursuing officer at least. So if you got one following and you got three setting up roadblocks ahead, are they following?
In the broad sense of the word, Your Honor, yes, they are. In our reply, we also talk about another definition of to follow, and it means to come after, watch steadily, attend to closely. These stop stick officers were watching what the defendant was doing, attending to him closely so they knew where to put the stop stick so they could capture him. They were just as much a part of this chase as Officer Feely. And so we would argue that the plain language of the statute indicates legislative intent to exclude officers who are involved in the chase. And this is also supported by the legislative history, Your Honor. The aggravator was enacted in response to two civilians that were broadsided when an individual was attempting to flee. The House bill report indicates it's concerned with children, pedestrians, shoppers. The Senate bill report talks about how the community would rather that officers stop rather than endanger people.
And others.
And basically this indicates that the legislature is concerned with innocent people being in the wrong place at the wrong time, not officers who have agreed to do a job which sometimes is somewhat dangerous. And finally, Your Honor, the prosecutor's interpretation would lead to a strained and absurd result because basically the stop stick officers here would fall within the gamut of people who are protected by the aggravator. But then officers like Officer Lipton, who are in direct pursuit, would not be. And there's basically no reason to distinguish between.
Well, isn't the reason that the pursuing officer, the logic is the penalty that's already in the crime covers that risk of harm to the pursuing officer. You have to have an element of the crime. If other people are endangered, that's not being punished, and that's why you had the enhancement.
Well, Your Honor, I think that in being an officer and taking part in these chases, there is a little bit of an assumption of the risk. And I think that the legislature, the bill report, and the Senate report, that supports that point of view. And really, all jobs when these officers are involved in a chase are dangerous. Officer Lipton's job is just as dangerous as a stop stick officer's. And their goal, their combined goal, is to stop this person who's attempting to flee. And that's their job to do that. And I think that the legislature was concerned with these innocent people, children going to school, pedestrians, shoppers. Not once did the legislature mention officers.
You could have said pursuing or apprehending officers are excluded. They didn't say that.
They did not, Your Honor. But again, I think in the broad sense of the word, pursuing means to follow, which means to attend to closely. So an alternate argument would be under the rule of lenity, it should be interpreted in favor of Thomas Feely. But again, I think the plain language supports our interpretation and that the prosecutor misstated the law. And this was very prejudicial to Mr. Feely because the evidence of other people being endangered was very weak in this case. And I don't know if Your Honors have had the opportunity yet to watch the video.
You haven't assigned error to the sufficiency of the evidence for the enhancement. You've just assigned error to misconduct.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The remedy would be what, a new trial on the enhancement?
Yes, Your Honor, it would be, because basically we have an ambiguous verdict here. We don't know what the jury relied on. I think that based on the video and Sergeant Flynn's testimony, that the more likely conclusion is that the jury relied on the stop stick officers. The video, and it will speak for itself, but it's pretty benign. It shows Thomas Feely driving on his side of the road. There's another car approaching. It slows down and pulls over. Lipton himself testified that it's most likely because the person saw his lights and heard his siren, and that's what people have been trained to do when they see sirens and hear, or the other way around. But Your Honor understands what I mean. And the only other two cars that they encounter is when the driver goes around a car on the right-hand side, and at the same time, a car is coming in the opposite direction a ways down the road. But in that case, the officer follows right behind the driver, and presumably the officer wouldn't do that if it was reckless, because, again, the officer is not supposed to chase if it's going to endanger other people. So I think that the video regarding endangering other people is really weak.
I'm not sure we actually have the video.
Oh, Your Honor, I thought that it was designated, but I will do that. I will go back to the office and check.
Before we run out of time, I wonder if you might speak to on the burden of proof, especially. How do you get to the prejudice? How do you show the prejudice there when before and after and multiple times I have the burden of proof, the prosecutor says I have the burden of proof beyond a reasonable doubt, I've got to prove all these elements beyond a reasonable doubt. Does that make it non-prejudicial?
Well, Your Honor, I think that the problem here is very similar to the case, the jigsaw puzzle case in Johnson, where the prosecutor here is basically informing the jury that it's sufficient if they intuit that the person is guilty and is essentially reading out the requirement of proof beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, I think the real question is whether a curative instruction could have obviated the prejudice here. And the Supreme Court's case in Emory talks about that. And so our alternate argument here would be, to the extent this could have been cured by an instruction, defense counsel should have objected and asked for one. It's defense counsel's job to know the law and to make objections when the prosecutor steps over the line. And here, if I may just finish up, Your Honor, obviously, the burden of proof is the bedrock of the presumption of innocence. And in this case, the state's case was prejudicial because none of the officers saw Feely driving. No one could tell if there was another passenger in the car. And the dog track evidence was somewhat confusing. So a misstatement of the burden of proof could have had an effect here. Thank you.
May it please the court, Philip Burei, Special Deputy Prosecutor for Whatcom County. Let me begin with the phrase pursuing law enforcement officer, because that really, I think, is the centerpiece of this appeal. In my mind, there are three variations of officers responding to this high-speed chase. There's Officer Lipton, who is right behind the car. He's the one who called in a failure to yield. And then when the defendant took off down these country roads, officer in pursuit. You then have the officers who get the call who go out in the field. Now, in the state's position, they are not pursuing law enforcement officers until they're in a cruiser following behind the defendant. If they're by the side of the road, as Officer Flynn was, they're not in pursuit. Yes, they're trying to apprehend.
But he wasn't just standing by the side of the road. He was participating in the effort to capture, apprehend this person, was he not?
Yes, he was. But he wasn't in pursuit.
And so he was assisting in the pursuit, was he not?
What he was doing, he was assisting in apprehending the defendant. He was trying to stop the defendant. Pursuit doesn't mean stop. Pursuit means you're chasing after. And here, you have the officers by the side of the road, but the problem is if we expand to the defendant's view of this, really any officer who gets the call, even the dispatch officer, is engaged in the pursuit of the defendant. The dispatch officer is there trying to apprehend the defendant. Every action that law enforcement takes to stop this defendant, whether they're in a car or not, under the defendant's view, would be in pursuit. That makes no sense.
I don't think the dispatch officer would be at risk.
Oh, certainly not at risk, exactly. And then let's flip over to, you know, what is the purpose of this statute? The purpose of this statute is to hold defendants accountable for the unreasonable risk they create when they speed off, right? And so, you know, you think about a tort concept, the zone of danger. Did the legislature really intend to exclude all uniformed officers from the zone of danger created by this defendant? Or more reasonably,
participating, I mean, they're similar to the officer who's driving the car in that their participation in the effort to capture this person is precisely what puts them at risk. Is it?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But you get back to, did the legislature intend to exclude those officers from the risk that this defendant created and the reason why we hold defendants accountable through a criminal sanction?
So do you believe it's the phrase is ambiguous?
No, I believe the phrase is not ambiguous because pursuing law enforcement officer, singular, implies only the officer in the cruiser directly behind the defendant chasing after.
What if the fleeing individual is driving in a circle and you have 10 officers who all converge on his location? Nobody's following him. Everybody's just trying to converge on his location. And so he's fleeing in the sense that he's going in a circle.
Okay. The first problem you have is you don't have anybody else who would be endangered by that. You know, if he's just doing donuts in a parking lot. So if there's a way to construct that hypothetical so that you have somebody maybe in a block going around the block so that there are civilians who are being who are at risk, absolutely, those civilians would be at risk. And every officer who drives the car to there, if they start to chase, they're part of the pursuit. On the other hand, if a beat cop gets a call and walks into the area and starts to lay down stop strips, he's not a pursuing officer under this statute. He's trying to apprehend the defendant, but he's not in a cruiser following directly behind. Again, the idea is to hold defendants accountable for everybody the defendant puts at risk. And the legislature could not include the pursuing officer because under those circumstances, the sentencing enhancement would apply to every chase. And that's not the nature of the sentencing enhancement. The sentencing enhancement kicks in only if someone other than the pursuing officer is put at risk.
Well, the officer has the discretion to continue the chase or break off the chase. The officer putting down the strips has the discretion to do so or to not expose himself to the risk of the oncoming vehicle. That's not a risk that's assumed by other pedestrians.
No, the risk is different. I mean, obviously, law enforcement officers are trying to apprehend this person. But I come back again to what is the purpose of this statute. The purpose of the statute is to hold the defendant accountable for the danger created. And the legislature did not anywhere in the legislative history suggest that responding officers who are on the ground by the side of the road are somehow immune. You know, that if, for example, in this case, think about in this case, if there weren't the two cars by the side of the road, is defendant's action, did defendant create no danger? Absolutely not. Is defendant not guilty of committing culpable behavior? Absolutely not. Is defendant deserving of the sentencing enhancement? Absolutely. Because with those two cars going along the road, he endangered people by the side of the road. The two people were wearing uniforms, but they were by the side of the road. They weren't in the car going behind.
On the burden of proof argument, isn't it the only way you can read this specific statement is it's very frustrating, juries come back, we know they were guilty, but you didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. That's inconsistent. Isn't that really another way of saying, if you know they're guilty, don't worry about burden of reasonable doubt. Just the decision is, did you know it or not know it?
Yeah, and part of my problem is I know the prosecutor. And I think this was a statement out of frustration. The most important thing about this statement is it is preceded by and followed by the state has the burden of proof. Nothing I say in this closing is designed to take away from the fact we must prove the defendant guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. What he was getting at is the frustration that prosecutors are feeling now, because of television procedurals, that, well, yeah, okay, you know, we knew the defendant was guilty, but you didn't have this or you didn't have that. He was trying to counteract that if the evidence shows beyond a reasonable doubt that this defendant committed the crime, then he's guilty.
But this statement was misconduct.
I don't think the statement was misconduct. It was unfortunate, but it certainly was, in the context, allowable argument.
You're suggesting it's allowable to suggest to the jury that they can find a person guilty even if each element of the crime hasn't been proved beyond a reasonable
doubt. That's not what he said.
Well, that is what he said. If you know he's guilty, it's frustrating. If you come out and say, we didn't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
What he said was, it is frustrating to me after a case when the jury comes back and said, we knew he was guilty, but we said not guilty.
Is it even relevant for him to be arguing about what's frustrating to him?
In hindsight, I don't think this prosecutor is going to say the same thing the same way again. But what he was getting at in the context was, if the evidence proves defendant's guilt, that's all the state has to do. That it's not that there has to be some particular kind of evidence, or that you have to have something beyond, yeah, we believe this defendant is guilty beyond a reasonable doubt.
On the other misconduct, where the court has issued an instruction saying, jurors, you can only use the evidence of these prior convictions to prove the element of felony DUI, and only for that purpose. And then he says, hey, you can use it for another purpose. You can use it to prove motive.
Okay,
and
again,
he hasn't gotten a ruling from the court that says that. Isn't that a...
Yeah, you got a couple of layers on that one. First, what he did was make an allowable argument under 404B, that this evidence is relevant for motive.
But that's an argument should have made to the judge, not to the jury.
Again, I suppose in hindsight, he should have asked for it ahead of time. But then if you've got just the violation of a judge's ruling in limine, it's the obligation of defense counsel to jump up and say, objection, this is in violation. At that point, the court then has to decide whether or not there was enough evidence that came in or whether the argument was allowable that the judge would modify the motion in limine. And then only if the judge says, no, the motion in limine was really designed to exclude every kind of argument, including this one. Ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you disregard that last statement.
And failing to do that is ineffective assistance?
I don't think it's ineffective assistance because it's not prejudicial. I mean, the issue here was defendant's identity. And this little snippet of a comment was designed to say who else but somebody with four DUIs would have a motive to run with the fifth.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Just a few comments, Your Honors. To address the motive argument and 404B, basically what the prosecutor did here was exploit the defendant's stipulation to the use of the priors. The defendant agreed that the priors could be used just for the purpose of finding whether the offense constituted a felony. So basically the state deprived the defendant of a 404B hearing in this case. Perhaps defense counsel would not have made this stipulation. We'd ask the court to find that the error is preserved because defense counsel asked for a limiting instruction and received one. So defense counsel had a standing objection to the evidence being used in any other manner than but for the finding of a felony. And regarding the prejudice here, the prosecutor wouldn't have made this argument were it not beneficial to its case. This gave the jury one more reason to think that it must have been Mr. Feely who was driving, because that he had the motive to flee, because he would be in more trouble than a typical person would be. Turning back to the stop stick officers, under the rule of lenity, a statute that's capable of more than one reasonable construction must be interpreted in favor of the accused. Now, here I think two interesting points have been made. First, one member of the court pointed out that maybe Lipton's already accounted for in the regular crime, but not the stop stick officers. But then another member of the court pointed out that, well, the risk is different to ordinary citizens because the police officers here can disengage at any time. So perhaps the statute is capable of more than one reasonable interpretation, and in that instance, it must be interpreted in favor of Mr. Feely. And but again, we argue that the plain language of the statute means that the stop stick officers were pursuing. They were following the driver of the truck. They were attending to him closely. They were attempting to overtake him. And obviously, there's no slippery slope here because a dispatch officer is not going to be endangered in any fashion. So that's a red herring of an argument. Finally, the burden of proof argument. The problem is that it was not cured by the reasonable doubt instruction because based on the prosecutor's argument, the jury could have equated this knowing, this knowledge, or intuiting that the person is guilty with having an abiding belief. So there's still a problem with the prosecutor's argument, even though there was an instruction. And it's curious why prosecutors keep talking about what is meant by reasonable doubt when there's so many cases out there that say it can be trivialized so easily. So we would ask this court to find that the prosecutor committed misconduct in trivializing the burden of proof. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you.